Tuesday mornings, we go live to our nation's capital and Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David Farenthold at the Washington Post. David, you've been busy since we spoke to you last week. What's going on right now with the Trump beat?
Well, one thing we were really interested in was Trump Tower, you know, the icon of Trump, the heart of his business, the place where he announced his campaign in 2016. It's not doing very well. It's Trump's home, it's the headquarters of his business, but it also has 11 floors of office space that are pretty important for him. He has a huge loan that's collateralized with those office space floors that's due next year. He needs to fill them. He needs money from them. And we looked at the tenants there and found that a couple of them, some major tenants, had basically moved out, fallen behind on rent and moved out. But Trump has one really steady, very good customer there, and that is his own political operation. His PAC rents an office on the 15th floor there. So basically they use political donors' money and turn it into private revenue for Trump's business for an office that the PAC barely uses.
Wow. So what does that do for Trump? Because I thought he was living at Mar-a-Lago, not in Trump Tower.
Well, he has a home on the top floor of Trump Tower, but officially his voting address is Mar-a-Lago. So I think he still goes to Trump Tower in the summer at least one day a week.
How does he get into New York without being noticed?
He gets noticed. He gets in a big motorcade at Trump Bedminster and drives in, usually later on a Sunday night after dinner, and leaves, you know, midday on Tuesday.
Oh, this is surprising way out here on the West Coast. I feel like the news of former President Trump has all but dried up.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot less interest in him now. A few weeks ago, we were there to see him pull up, you know, wave to 10 or 20 people who are gathered there. And then he leaves again a couple of days later. He's doing some
supporters?
Work. Supporters that we saw, at least.
Okay, sounds good. You never know outside of Trump Tower.
And it's sort of tourists. I mean, people just sort of gawking, probably more than supporters.
Absolutely. Well, and also important to continue to, even though the interest in him has dried up, still important to follow the money, follow the investigations, because a former, chief financial officer of Trump's organization, Alan Weisselberg, you wrote about him along with one of your colleagues. He was indicted earlier this summer on 15 felony counts and has now agreed to testify to the grand jury. So where's that going?
Well, in that case, Alan Weisselberg, his chief financial officer, has been indicted. So far, we don't know that he's agreed to testify before the grand jury. There's another player in this drama named Matthew Calamari Jr., another Trump executive who has agreed to testify. We're trying to figure out what happens next. As you said, Weisselberg has been indicted on 15 felony counts, all related to a scheme where he allegedly defrauded the IRS, defrauded the New York State Taxing Authority by hiding some of Trump Organization executives' pay, including some of his own pay, from the tax man, so they had to pay less taxes on him. The question is that it? You know, the New York Attorney General and the Manhattan DA have been investigating Trump Org for years. They've gotten Trump's taxes. They have thousands of pages of documents. Is that all they're going to get? Or is there some other shoe left to drop? And this is not, I don't think, an open-ended investigation, because Cyrus Vance, the Manhattan DA, who's been leading the criminal case, he didn't run for re-election, so he is out of office at the end of December. And if he is going to try to put this, you know, the investigation to bed, he only has a few more months to do it.
It seemed like during his time as president, at any moment, somebody was going to get him, right? Everybody was investigating him. Everybody was, you know, from journalists to, you know, DAs, everybody was about to get him. You know, the impeachment was the end of all of that. And
Mueller, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing seems to stick on this man. Is this just real life, how investigations play out and they're more boring than the movies? Or is it really that he just is escaping? Or maybe he didn't do anything. Maybe he's clean as a whistle.
Well, I think there's two possibilities. And we haven't seen the end of this. One is that, yes, he didn't do anything that breaks the law. And that's partly because the world of New York City real estate developers includes there's a huge amount of sort of leeway built into the law for them. They can mislead people to a degree. They can mislead the taxing authorities to a degree. There's a certain amount of hyperbole and fibs that apparently are taken for granted in the world of New York real estate. So, you know, it's hard to prosecute them for things. It's not like, say, the SEC. If you were a publicly traded company, there's a lot more stringent rules about what you can say and what you can't say. If you're in New York City real estate, you can stretch the truth a long way before it becomes illegal. So that's part of it. He
good
lives his business. Yeah, he's right. It's a good career change. His business exists in a world where the laws are not as stringent as they are in other places. The other thing is that, you know, white collar investigations now, and that's what this is, it, you know, white collar business investigations have come to turn so much on email. You know, executives hang themselves with the emails. I think we saw that with the Sackler, the Purdue Pharma case. Wow. There's been a number of other cases where emails are what undid people. And Trump, you know, whether it's to hide his tracks or just because he's old, doesn't use email, never has. And so that makes it a lot harder to say, you know, this happened because Donald Trump said it. And that's a really important part of this case, to show that Trump himself knew what he was doing is wrong and ordered people to do it anyway. Without email, it's hard to get that sort of smoking gun in an executive case.
Wow, that is incredibly smart, whether you said it was purposeful or it's just because he's of an older generation. I do remember reading that he still had his assistants cut out newspaper clippings that mentioned him, and he would read them every morning. So he didn't go online and search his name. He would ask for those newspaper clippings. Is that still the case, or was that just lore?
No, I think that is. And he's somebody who sends handwritten notes and, you know, writes, he'll take the newspaper clipping and write, you know, great job or whatever, you're terrible, whatever he wants to on the clipping and send it to people. Even his tweets often were done by somebody else. He would say something and then somebody else would write it down and tweet it.
That's
so,
right.
You know, that, whether it's, like you said, whether it's habit or purpose, you know, insulating himself a little bit from email is, I think, maybe helped him.
Who do you think would have taught him those kind of tricks? His dad?
Well, maybe. I mean, if Fred Trump was long ago pre-email, you know, there's always this lore about Roy Cohn, who was this famous lawyer who was investigated communists and with McCarthy in the 50s and then worked for members of the mob. You know, he would always say, you know, don't write what you can say. Don't say it if you can nod, you know, this sort of mafia code that I think good lawyers teach anybody, that, you know, try not to write down things you're doing as much as you can. Trump seems to have absorbed that from somewhere.
Interesting. Taking a turn to the current president, Biden, he's touring some flood disasters in New York and New Jersey today, but his approval seems to have taken a hit after the withdrawal from Afghanistan. What's happening there?
That's right. His approval across the board, which had been really steady for the first 5 or 6 months of his term, has taken a hit from Afghanistan, I think from the surge in Delta COVID cases. You know, this is Biden's, he was kind of in a honeymoon period for a while. This is his first real crisis. Afghanistan was his first real crisis. And COVID is, you know, this is a resurgence of a crisis I think he believed he had beaten. You know, he's now the end of summer, the Labor Day, the Afghanistan investigation is, the Afghanistan withdrawal is over. It's a chance for him to reset and start to rebuild that approval rating. And I think he's hoping he can do that through the passage of big legislation in Congress, through this infrastructure bill and also through this big Democratic spending bill. I think that plus, you know, an increase in vaccinations and a decrease in COVID, those are the things I think he's hoping can rebuild his approval rating. I mean, granted, it's still 2021. If he's going to run for re-election, he's got a long time to do it.
Right. Are popularity polls still useful? I feel like, I mean, I know it's called an approval poll, but I kind of call it a popularity contest. Like, how popular are you right now?
Yeah.
And it goes back and forth so often. Is it something the president actually looks at to determine his actions?
I mean, these are politicians. So I'm sure they do. But I think in his case, the more important barometer for him is going to be the midterm elections in 2022, which are still more than a year away. But if the Democrats, you know, he needs to give Democrats more than himself something to go back and run on. And he needs to hope that the Republicans continue to, you know, embrace things like fighting mask mandates and things like that that aren't very popular. You know, there's a long time before 2022. But if I was Biden, that's the number I'd be watching. You know, the generic ballot, the polls about who you're going to vote for in 2022. You know, his popularity affects that, but it's sort of an indirect measure.
Sure. Absolutely. All right. David Ferenthold, Pulitzer Prize winning reporter from The Washington Post. You ever get tired of hearing that?
No, never. Never. Say as much as you want.
Good for you. I love saying it, too. David, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thank you.
It's 8:23 now.